Valley, and we can't make a move without him, so, standing by.
And if we did.
Lou, and I will also open up a public hearing on Senate Bills 570 and 571. And just want to make sure that there is no one here that wants to testify on these bills today. There is no new action yet. They're still working on a new draft of amendments for 570 and 571, and for the new bill, if we join these two together, which will be Senate Bill 611. So if there is no new business on those, I'll close the public hearing on those two bills. And I will open a simultaneous public hearing on Senate Bill 567 and Senate Joint Resolution 14. Paul Warner is here to present these bills to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll ask Kyle to go to the reserve funds in Oregon. Both of these bills are designed to enhance the state's reserve fund position. What Senate Bill 567 does is it increases the amount of resources going into the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. This is a concept that's been around for a while in the directing interest earnings that go now to the general fund, into the reserve fund. I know Senator Edwards had worked on this in the past, and the treasurer has been very interested in this idea too. And that's what that's a restatement of that. The other thing it does is it increases the 1% allocation, up to 1% of appropriations, to the Oregon Rainy Day Fund to 1.5%. So that's the concept behind 567. The HJR 14 basically is almost a placeholder, really, to deal with a reallocation of kicker credit money. What it does is it takes 50% of the kicker credit and puts it into the Oregon Rainy Day Fund, and the other 50% would go out as a credit. So you do the same calculation and split that up in two. That would require, because it would alter the kicker, that would require a constitutional amendment. So that's why you have an SJR to it.
Okay.
If you look at on the screen there, the reserve fund characteristics, and I know some of this, a number of you are intimately involved in working with creation of both of these funds. The Education Stability Fund was created during one of the numerous special sessions of 2002. It is a constitutional fund. It's 18% of lottery earnings. And of course, that's where the 3/5 vote comes in and has a lot more teeth, is because it's constitutional, requires a 3/5 vote in each chamber. It has been tapped regularly during the Great Recession. In fact, was tapped when it was first established, because there was a financial crisis brought on by the old 102 recession. That fund now is currently running with about $176 million as an expected ending balance. There's a criteria that were established when the Education Stability Fund was first set up. And you can see them there, revenue forecast down 2%. We thought that was good symmetry with the kicker to have that 2% down requirement. Payroll employment down 2 consecutive quarters, really designed to kind of mimic the kind of rule of thumb on recessions, that it's 2 declining quarters consecutively. The last session forecast showing a large decline in revenue, or the governor declaring an emergency. So those all become a finding, regardless of what finding you have of those, it's always a 3/5 vote. So, I mean, that's the key element of getting into that fund. And it has a 5% of prior biennium revenues as its cap. The Rainy Day Fund, it was established in 2007, and that, of course, has its history tied back to the corporate kicker. We had a very large corporate kicker, about $340 million in following the old 507 biennium. $319 million of that went into the reserve fund, and that is the time That's the one time that the legislature has used, since the kicker went in the Constitution, the legislature has used its ability to change the estimate. And that's the way the Constitution reads, is the legislature can change the estimate upon which the kicker is based. So obviously, if you're 3% over the forecast, which would trigger the kicker, the legislature could come in and raise the forecast by 3%, and in effect the kicker would go away. Now, of course, the trick to that is it takes not just a 3/5 but a 2/3 vote to change that kicker estimate. So, and the kicker itself is based on the base is determined by the end of regular session estimate. The Constitution is very clear about that. It's the end of regular session for the odd year estimate. So that means you've got that one estimate, and then if the legislature changes it, it takes that 2/3 vote. So that was done in 2007, and that became really the basis for the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. And now the revenue flow into that fund is a general fund up to 1%. So if you look at 15-17, that's around $150 million. We've had several biennium where we didn't get up to the 1% because you were just barely limping over the line to get a positive ending balance and didn't have a full 1%. One of the things that Senate Bill 567 is designed to do is to, in those periods where you would be short in terms of getting that full 1%, it would give you an extra revenue source to help get to that point. So the triggers are the same. Those we just use those exact same language that were in the Constitution for the Education Stability Fund. There is a limitation on that up to 2/3 can be used, beginning balance for any biennium. The reason for that was one of the lessons that we've learned over time, and that was that when you're hit with a recession and you get below forecast, you start doing a lot of things to get through that biennium. And one of the consequences of that is you take one-time actions, you tend to have a small ending balance, and so the fiscal effects definitely feed off into the next biennium. So even if the economy begins to recover, recession usually affects two biennia to make that, to adjust back to a normalcy. And the cap on that is 7.5% of prior biennium appropriations. So those are the current the reserve funds you have. If you look at the our other pieces of information we have for you that are background on these bills, Senate Bill 567, we have it listed as SGR 14, but it's really for Senate Bill 567. You can see the history of interest earnings. And these are the way the interest earnings work in the general fund is any interest on accounts that is not specified to go to a particular other fund account usually goes to the general fund. So the general fund is kind of the default. And you can see what's happened in some of these years, and some of these I remember well, like 95, 97, for example, we got this huge jump in interest earnings. Well, the reason for that is that we were running way above the forecast, so we had large balances. Well, you have large balances. You also were nearing an interest rate cycle peak, so you had pretty decent return, especially compared to nowadays. So you've got this big jump in interest. One of the interactions you had here, and still do, although it's been damped, is that you're running over forecast, you're collecting more interest earnings, the interest earnings figure into the 2% kicker.
Yeah.
So you kind of get this feedback loop in there. And that, of course, we did have a kicker in 95, 97, and it ended up in adding to the kicker refunds that were sent out in the fall of 97. You can see that what those earnings look like. And then, of course, we go down into the down years, 01, 03 recession, our interest earnings drop way off because our balances dropped way off. Part of it, you know, was countercyclical monetary policy. Rates went down. But big part of it was we just didn't have the balances because we were barely getting through in terms of the cash flow for the general fund. 05-07, another example where the last time we did have a personal kicker was not by coincidence, was the last time we got over $100 million in interest earnings. So again, it was feeding into that kicker effect. Now, we went through a major change with the reform and restructuring of higher education. One of the things that the higher education institutions received was the interest on their balances. So that was a big change, and that dropped this base considerably. So instead of those earnings, because they were specified anywhere else, they just went to the general fund, now they go back to higher ed. And you can see how that's really forced that number down. Big drop in 09-11 because that change was implemented. But also, of course, we didn't have any balances then either. And interest rates were extremely low. But you can see that the interest earnings now is a much smaller issue than it once was, although you can see that the latest forecast does have them coming back. And that's based on the presumption that we're going to start to see what us old-timers would consider more normal interest rates. So although it's been quite a while since we've seen Center interest vocals. Rates.
So I'm just curious, since I'm not old. Yeah, right, okay. I haven't read it, my mistake. 15-17, Federal Reserve makes their changes. What's the guess at the interest rate? You said more. What's that forecast based on average? 2-4-6%.
Senator, it calls for a gradual increase in the federal funds rate, which of course now is essentially 0 to 0.25%. So I think that's expected to get up to around 2% by that time, and then of course that would push up the interest rate structure.
Right. Thanks. So,
and that of course, you know, this is all goes for the Treasury. This all goes into their short-term fund. So they're basically buying short-term U.S. securities and you know, commercial paper, those kinds of things that are money market assets. So that gives you a sense on the interest earnings. The issue is not as large as it once was, but still maybe a source. Remember, one of the things we've talked about in terms of reserve fund policy, one of the recommendations that was made by the Pew Research Center was to try to capture some of your volatile sources and put them aside when they're above what you expect. So this would be one possibility to meet that.
Paul, I was just going to note that I was intimately involved with the higher education restructuring that not only let the universities keep their interest earnings, but it also prohibited the legislature from sweeping their reserve funds, too. And so while those are smaller numbers, it's been a huge boon for public universities. So it goes both ways. Mm-hmm.
So the last piece of information is the kicker history. And the kicker history, of course, goes back to 79-81 when legislature first established it in statute in 1979. 79 Conference Committee established it. It was reaffirmed by voters in the following spring in a referral. They supported that, but also other major elements of the referral included a property tax relief program. They were a big part of that fiscal package. So you can see the history, and then if you come back toward the more modern times, you go back to 93-95, for example, personal kicker, you've had a little over $2 billion returned, and what SGR 14 would do is reduce that by about half, so you'd retain roughly $1 billion over that historical period. There are some caveats, of course, with the history of the kicker. One is that if you look at these kickers that went out in the mid-90s that were quite large, they would have been, in most cases, larger, except for some actions taken by the legislature. I think a lot of you remember the SAFE payment in which, because the kicker was in the Constitution, the legislature made an adjustment that one-time payments, expenditures, could actually be counted against the kicker. that reduced the size of the 95-97 kicker. You can see it was $432 million. That reduced it by about $80 million. And then in 09-01, another bit of kicker history is the MUPL, which was the Medicaid upper payment limit, which was essentially a federal revenue source that, frankly, DAS, or we didn't know what to do with that revenue source. We didn't have no idea it was going to be as large as it was, so we just got put in the general fund. And then it grew to about $110 million and was adding to the kicker. So the legislature, in the 01 legislature, after the fact, said that no, it's not general fund. Therefore, it's not part of the kicker. So that reduced the kicker by about $110 million. There was a court case on that, Bobo versus Kulongoski, and the court upheld the legislature's ability to do that. They argued it was not a bill for raising revenue. So that's one of the few pieces of court evidence we have revolving around the kicker. That was, however, 0103 was the, or 9901 was the last biennium in which the kicker was carried out, implemented under statute. Since that time, it's been in the Constitution with the referral to the voters in 2000. So you can see that since that time, we've had just one kicker, the large kicker in 0507, which was $1,071,000,000. So under SGR 14, you would have split that in half and put about $535 million into the reserve fund, and the return $535 million. So in effect, your credit would have gone down to about 9.3%.
Okay, there's a trip down memory lane. Not all that pleasant trip.
Mm-hmm.
Questions?
Just to reclarify, can you refresh my memory again? I think you said this. What's the trigger mechanism for 1315? The revenue trigger mechanism on the personal kicker?
The 2% there, you see we're up $261.2 million.
Right.
$291 million is the 2% threshold. So, of course, what we'll be looking for next Thursday when the forecast comes out to see what the estimate of the state economist is and see if it's over that 291.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that our revenue sources are coming in over projections, so the economy continues to do well. The other thing to keep in mind is that the kicker is, overwhelmingly, it's the personal income tax and its components. But it's also the other non-corporate elements of the general fund. So one of the things we've seen happen over the last 6 months is a lot stronger than expected estate tax growth. That factors into that calculation. So anything that's not corporate factors into it.
Provider tax?
Provider tax is not general fund. So it has to be a general fund item. And lottery, even though we use it like general fund, is not part of it either. But it's not general fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let me get this straight. As the session winds down in, well, I'll say June. I'll be optimistic. Somewhere in there, we'll have a projection, correct?
Senator, you'll have a projection May 15th.
Okay.
And that will be the one in which it's you're to use the latest available. So unless you go to September, then that would be the one you would use.
Watch
and
you
hopefully
say.
That will be the one.
Okay, so that'll be the one that will trip the kicker or not trip it.
Senator, the kicker is two numbers. It's the estimate that's made at the end of the regular session. That becomes the base. So that May 15 forecast plus whatever actions you take as a legislature that affects the general fund, that becomes the close of session estimate for 15-17.
Okay.
So it becomes the base. So the base that we're looking at now was done in the summer of 2013, August of 2013, and that will be compared with the actual amount of money that comes in the door. So it's the actual versus that. Now, the actual, the general fund is nearly all on a cash basis, but there's one exception. Withholding receipts in the first 30 days are accrued back to the biennium. So we don't know that till July 31st, and usually we'll know the kicker around August 10th. We'll know what the actual numbers are and be able to say exactly what the kicker is What happens is the state economist then sends a memo over to Department of Revenue to estimating what the credit would be, and then they start to apply that now to tax returns for the following year.
So that would be a credit in 2016?
Yeah, well, the credit would be for 2015 when you file your 2015 taxes, but you do that spring of 16.
Yeah. Right.
Or with 40 votes and 20 votes, the legislature could change the estimate and
yes.
nullify the kicker.
Yes, and the legislature could change the estimate, basically anything that is agreed upon.
Could the legislature do that after this session? In other words, could there be a special session, say, in December or January for that vote?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to look at specific dates. I would think so, yes, as long as you do it before it's, you know, actually processed and sent out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Senator Edwards has a question.
Senator Edwards?
A follow-up question on establishing the base with the state economist forecast. Is that ever, is that affirmed in a piece of legislation? Do we say... as we're building the budgets at the end of session, we accept this forecast. This is the forecast, and is that just a simple majority vote?
Senator Edwards, the way the Constitution reads is the governor is responsible for preparing the close of session. It says as soon as practical following sine die. So the way the reporting works is it comes out publicly with the release of the September forecast. So that comes out in August. Now, of course, the way it works down in Ways and Means, you've got a running estimate of what that is. And then so you use that estimate in which to balance the legislatively adopted budget. But the official statement of the close of session is done by the executive branch, and it comes out with the September forecast. So it's usually this year, I think it'll be August 27th.
Okay, thank you.
Follow up to the chair's question on tampering or the legislative legislative.
You choose another word.
I did. I backed up, Mr. Chair. I apologize. Okay, that wasn't your word. Okay. The buck does stop here. In the kicker process, in the law, the legislature hypothetically could come into a special session up to a certain point, but then because of the kicker law, it's gone by the time we would come back here in February of the next short session. Isn't that right? I mean, the law starts clicking in, and there's this kind of like a suspense date that mm-hmm. if the legislature were to do something in a crisis, as example, SAFE, the old SAFE crisis, or something like that, in which they had to make a modification due to an extreme situation, right? When is the legal filing or drop dead date for that? Is it into December?
Senator, I don't think there's a legal drop dead date. I think there's a practical one. The kicker is it's a credit.
Right.
So for people to get the credit, Department of Revenue, when they begin developing their forms, they have to include that. And they usually start that process in October mm-hmm. and would finish it usually in November or early December. So as a practical matter, they need to know that number by early October so they can build that into the forms and send, when they send those out at the start of the year. So I think that would be the practical limit. And we run into that with credits all the time. In fact, you know, this has come up with revenue measures. You can change taxes. You could change, for example, the 2015 taxes now okay. during the session and have them apply to this year. Mm-hmm. And the only limitation you really have on that is the practicality.
So then what you're saying, in practical terms, if, you know, 4 years from now, hypothetically, you notice I did say I put it out in front of us. Okay. Hypothetically, in 4 years, an emergency came about, the legislature would have to make a decision by early November to take funds out of the kicker for an emergency purpose or something, practically speaking.
Yes, I think so, yes.
Thank you.
And just to make clear on the place of the language in SCR 14, were it to be passed by voters, it would have no effect on a kicker that would kick this time.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair. And this, with most all of the constitutional amendments we've looked at with a kicker, it has to start with that base. So the base would be for the 15-17.
Okay. Riley? We do have a couple people signed up. Matt Evans is here. SJR 14 or Senate Bill 567.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt Evans. I'm here today representing the Taxpayers Association of Oregon, urging a no vote on SJR 14. The kicker has been supported by voters of the state on two separate occasions. As Mr. Warner mentioned, originally it was passed as part of a package of fiscal reforms that were seen by the voters as necessary. And then later on, the kicker was put into the Constitution by those same voters, in part because this body saw fit to suspend it on a couple of occasions, as Mr. Warner's chart showed, and take the money that was supposed to kick back to taxpayers and spend it anyway. Now that it is in the kicker with a margin of over 60% by the voters, it's important to take a step back and realize that those monies are expected by the voters to be off limits to the legislature. The kicker represents over-collected taxes. When you get your final forecast of revenue, those are the dollars on which you build your budgets. If you believe at the time that those dollars are insufficient to build your budgets, you should find additional revenues somehow, or you should find a way to curtail some budgets in order to spend more money on the priorities that the legislators believe are important, rather than coming back after the fact and saying, well, we didn't have enough money, we didn't want to raise taxes at the time, we didn't want to change around the way we spent it, therefore we need these additional dollars that otherwise we would not have access to. As Mr. Warner also said, Oregon appears to be having a bit of an improving economy, although I wouldn't call it going gangbusters as yet. Efforts to take additional dollars out of the private economy and flow them through government is going to do nothing more than delay the day when Oregon can get back to a better economic state. Hopefully when our average wages in Oregon run ahead of the national average instead of behind. The Taxpayer Association urges a no vote on SJR 14, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Questions? Thank you, sir.
Thanks for your time.
Bill Olson.
Chair Haas, members of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, my name is Bill Olson. I'm co-chair of the Human Services Coalition Tax and Revenue Committee. We've been very concerned over a period of time with tax expenditures and their impact on revenues available for what we consider critical services. But today we're dealing with the issue, I think, of stability. And that's one of the principles that we look at when we look at the budget and the processes that we have here. Frankly, it's just a matter of going back and looking at all the discussion that has taken place over time on this issue. Most notably, I was looking at the Revenue Restructuring Task Force that was headed by former Representative Lane Shetterly beginning in 2008, and I think that went on into early 2010. And I quote Mr. Shetterly here in the piece that I've given you, indicating that effectively current law prevents the state from saving money during good times to be available during the hard times. I seem to remember a biblical story on that general topic, but nonetheless, we support SJR 14 because we believe it will enhance stability of our budgeting process by allowing some funds that are underestimated to be put into a reserve fund, divides it between giving some back through a credit to taxpayers, personal taxpayers, and building a reserve fund over time. It's certainly not going to do it in a hurry. So that's our simple story. We believe that this would be good legislation, prudent, and the voters should have a chance to revisit decisions that they've made in the past. If their decisions are causing problems or issues, they may or may not decide to support it, but let's give them a chance.
Questions for Mr. Olson?
No, it is a statement. We've certainly in the last decade revisited a lot of these issues.
All right, thank you. No one else has signed up to testify on either of these bills. Paul, anything else?
Yeah, that's it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Committee, thank you. If there's no other... Senator Boquist.
You're just going to close the work session here, or the hearing here, right? Then we're going to go to a work session, correct?
I will close the public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 14 and SB 567, and we'll go into a work session for purpose of introducing legislation.
That's
good. Senator Boquist, you have a bill?
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 3497, dated 2/9/15, be introduced as a committee bill, and Mr. Warner can explain it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh.
Senator Boquist moves.
3497.
It's the Roblin bill.
Oh, you don't know, huh?
Well,
Mr. Chair, this is a placeholder bill involving intangible properties for which we're having a discussion for, and it might be relevant, it might not be, and of course, none of the members are either going to vote for or against it until after we have that discussion. So, see, we can get
thank
by
you.
Without Paul occasionally.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Boquist moves to introduce LC 3497 as a committee bill. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the bill is introduced. And... we'll close that work session on bill introduction. Again, we're going to revisit central assessment tomorrow through the bills that are currently in play on our calendar, SB 570 and SB 571, while keeping on deck the new central assessment bill of 611, which, because of posting, cannot be heard tomorrow. So we're working on amendments, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about that and revenue impacts tomorrow on the issue of central assessment. So with that, and there's no further business, we are adjourned.
I don't like this one,
we are adjourned.